Welcome to Answers Unleashed, a talk show to help you reshape your brain with science and faith so you find the answers in front of you. I am your host, Olympia LaPointe. Now, you have been tuning into the show to know that we have the greatest experts here. I call them the newest Einsteins. These are individuals that will come on the show, help us understand a new way of looking at a situation so we can move forward in all the different areas of our life. Now, you've been hearing all about the Me Too controversy in the media, right? The Me Too, which is the women who have gone through such sexual experiences, sexual abuse, sexual discomfort, physical discomfort, that it has altered the way that they saw the world and handled the world based on that experience. Well, do you ever know that individuals have come out of this Me Too experience? Well, today, I have great news for us. We have a person here on the show that's going to help us understand how to overcome any type of adversity when it comes to any type of difficult early upbringing so we can thrive and move forward. So today's show is From Me Too to We Thrive. Now, how does a person who has experienced Me Too sexual abuse and trauma and foster care experiences thrive into becoming a leader and a change maker? The founder of the MetamorphosExperience.org and author of the Metamorphos Experience, Alicia Cass, founded Metamorphos Me. Now, what this is a service for women, girls, and youth in South Los Angeles and the Pasadena area of California who have been exposed to or who has been at risk to violence-related trauma stemming from gangs, sexual abuse, physical abuse, domestic abuse. Just like the butterfly touches the petals of flowers and branches of trees and the rocks in the stream, Alicia Cass Organization partners with individuals and organizations to transform lives, not one, not just some, many lives. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to join me as we talk to Alicia Cass. And in this episode, we're going to understand this revolutionary effect of how to change the brain from the Me Too experience to the We Thrive experience and changing that destructive path into a thriving one. Now, Alicia, audience, please welcome Alicia Cass to the show. Thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. Now, let me tell the audience a little bit about your background. And the audience, okay, if you will listen a little bit about her background, your background is so amazing. And the reason why I have you on this show is because you have such a tremendous story. And that story is inspiring people to change the direction of their lives because you had to change the direction of your life.
Yes.
Now, can we hear? Okay, great. At the innocent age of 4, you found your mother's lifeless body in a small dwelling. And at 4 and a half, your life turned upside down. You were physically and sexually abused. And then the death of your mother and the innocence that was lost triggered you to go into a system. It was a foster care system and a self-destructive system,
yeah,
too. And this foster care that you were in there for a little bit, but that wasn't your home.
No.
You were in a situation where you had to find your home, and the home that you found was an imitation, which was a gang home, and you were in this gang selling drugs for survival.
Yes.
And the story even gets deeper. At 15 years old, you were forced to leave the foster care that you were in. And this is like really huge because you were a high school dropout at this time.
Yes, I was a high school dropout.
And this, per the statistics, and this is how crazy this is, per the statistics, for a person in this pattern, this pointed to death. And at the age of 19, you found yourself with 3 kids. no direction. This is, I love your story because this is so powerful. No guidance nor support. And then you soon become a mother of six.
Yes.
And then there was a breakthrough moment. What happened through, and this is the craziest part, a broken jaw. And through that experience, your life metamorphosized, I guess you would say, changed to an experience that would later shape the lives of thousands of people that will find out about your story. Now, you've just written a book.
Yes.
Tell the audience about your book.
So the title of my book is called Metamorphosis, The Butterfly Experience. And I started on a quest to write this book over 20 years ago, never got done. And when I finally completed it in 2016, it was just a chronicle of my journey of how I went from the caterpillar, how I went into the cocoon phase, and finally how I emerged as the butterfly that I am, that how I had truly transformed from the person that I used to be to the person that I am now.
I find your story amazing. And people always say my story is amazing. And I love highlighting people who also have these stories because it is through our collective work of getting out there and sharing our stories, not succumbing to shame, but rather realizing that our testimony has a power in it, do we have the opportunity to change lives. Now, walk us through that experience. You went through a lot of trauma. And it's easy for you to look back on it because you're no longer in it. I know. We can laugh now. You're like, we're out.
Right. So, many tears after, right.
Yes. So just walk us through that. But now looking back, I mean, so just briefly walk us through that. Did you remember that when you were four, when you saw your mother?
I do remember finding my mother, my mother's deceased body. I do remember my grandmother coming to the house and trying to wake my mother up because my other siblings were at school. And I didn't realize that her death and then my father's blame of us because my mother died, because she was only supposed to have, I believe, two kids. My mother had five kids.
Five.
She's very young. She was very young. She had a heart condition.
Oh,
and so
wow.
With that, after my mother died, the blame shifted to us. Mm. And so that's where my father's violence played in a part. And that was even a part of trauma. You know, you go home, you're a husband, you come home and you don't have a wife and you have five children. And the youngest of five is four. So it took me years to understand his trauma and to forgive him. But I realized that his trauma, along with my trauma, it just kept a cycle of violence going in my life.
A snowball effect.
Yes.
Snowball effect. It was once it just added to it.
Yes.
That happens in not only your life. That happened in my life. That happened in thousands of people's lives, millions of people's lives, where that early trauma, if we don't find a way to remove it, it gets trapped and it gets like eating away at us, causing us to make decisions that are not based on enlightenment, but based on shame.
Yes.
So walk us through a little bit more.
And so, you know, as a result, after that point, I was always a fighter, so I always was in trouble in school.
So that was your way of surviving?
That was my way of surviving. I can remember fighting as early as kindergarten, staying in trouble, going into the principal's office. She knew my name because I always sat at her desk at five.
But that was a good thing. Someone always knowing your name, it was a good thing, but it was applied in the wrong way.
Yes. Yeah,
but that was your calling to have your name known.
Yes.
But the way it was being known was in a way of survival.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, we were in and out of relatives' homes, you know, back and forth with my father. My father would abuse us. It was I'm trying to think of it. I worked there, McLaren Hall at the time, and they took in abused children. So we would go to McLaren Hall. They returned us to our dad. Department of Children and Family Services wasn't yet founded in 1975. Mm. So we would go back and forth between this place and my relative's house and my dad's house. We would cry because we didn't want to stay in that place. They would send us back home. So my father never sought the help that he needed for his trauma. And that's why he was so abusive. And so over the years, you know, the back and forth into foster care, I think I joined a gang when I was probably about 13 years old.
How did that happen?
You know, I grew up in a neighborhood, and everyone at that time wanted to belong. So whether it was the kid that was overweight being teased, whether it was the kid that didn't have it, everybody wanted a sense of belonging. And here it is in the heart of this neighborhood. They saw people older than them who really took them in. So for me, no one asked me to come in. I grew up with these people.
So you grew up with them. And there was a point in time, there was, can you go back to that moment in time where you realized, well, you realized the false family? What point in time were you thought at that moment that that was your family?
I thought at 13 that that was my family. I didn't figure out that that wasn't my family and probably until about 26 years old.
Because people don't know this, and I want to really break this down for people, because I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and I know about the gangs. And if you watch the TED Talk, Reprogramming Your Brain to Overcome Fear that I did, you know that my face was sliced open by a gang member in a classroom. So it was something that was very traumatic for me, and people don't know about gangs. What gangs do, it is a structured system. It's nothing like you think. It's not chaotic in any way, shape, or form. It is a structured system where they recruit young people at the earliest ages to carry through business transactions that are illegal.
Yes.
That and people don't understand the type of gangs that exist in these neighborhoods. So they're mafias it's an urban mafia. That's what it is. And there's so many kids that are in these situations that do not have a home, that do not have someone, that is looking to just belong. And these institutions are like predators. And don't be fooled. The gangs are very well structured. If they were to do this on a legal standpoint, they would be the greatest corporations on the face of the planet. They would be running all the different type of infrastructures that we need. If it was actually a legal standpoint, these gangs would be top-notch in business.
Yes.
Top-notch in business. So this, if I could share with our audience, this institution that you were in, it was training your brain to think a certain way that wasn't true.
Yes.
And what was that?
It was training me to think that violence was normal, that or being a part of violent culture was normal. And so you would see the yellow tapes because someone was killed the night before. We would just walk past the yellow tape. That's traumatic for children to walk to school and they have to walk past yellow tape, which was an indicator someone was murdered the night before. Or you see the candlelight vigils when someone was murdered, they put the teddy bear. We would just walk through as if nothing was wrong. So violence became the norm, which was not normal. So it was training us, this is how you survive in a violent situation. And I thought that was normal.
Now, this is no different than war victims and people within war. And it is the same as if you were to talk to someone that would be in Serbia on a war. It's someone that's gone through Vietnam. It is a person that's gone through World War I, World War II, people that have been in Iraq. It is the same type of mental anguish.
Yes.
That people go through.
Yes.
Now, and I really know what you're talking about the kids. The first time I ever saw someone almost die, I think I was 8 or 9 down the street. It was our neighbor who had his throat sliced because he tried to save somebody.
Wow.
And that was the impression. And I think a couple months later is when I saw my first dead body of someone being shot down at the liquor store on the corner. And this was in my brain. And I thought this was normal until I was bused into a school over on another side of the LA, and everyone was like, "Oh yay, popsicle lollipops," and I'm here thinking to myself, "What are they looking at?" And that, yes, that ability to see the two different worlds allowed me to be able to exit the world that was traumatic.
Yes.
Now, walk us through this. You then have a child.
I have a child.
And how old were you when you had your first one?
I got pregnant at 15. He was murdered. I was 16 when I gave birth to my oldest daughter. Didn't stop gang banging. Just thought it was a part of the norm. Then I had a second baby. I was 18. Then I had a third baby. I'm 19.
Now how did this work? I mean, when you had your children and you were in the gang, who took care of your children? Or how did that go?
I actually took care of my own children. You know, my sister watched my kids a lot because I was out there running the streets. I still had not mended the relationship with my father. So I didn't really move back in his house after I got kicked out of my last foster home. I hit the streets. So
I still didn't have a home.
I still didn't have a home. I still didn't have a home. So whether it was motels or couch searching or, you know, different friends' house, or sometimes I slept outside because that's what we did. And a lot of the gang members, they were homeless. They came out of foster care. They were abused. They saw the trauma. So that was a commonality also that bonded us, the trauma of having no home. So that's what made us decided we were going to be family.
The statistics is that did you know that 75% or more of the people in incarceration come from foster care?
Yes.
And that, if you don't know this, this is something that's huge, because this is an epidemic that's happening because people who do not know or do not experience a home, or people who are loving and supportive of them, are recruited into these organizations, which are illegal, which do illegal things, I should say. So you have now your third child.
Yes.
And then you enter a relationship with a man who is abusive, who continues the abuse that you knew when you were a child, because that's what the only way that love that you knew.
Yeah. And the funny thing about that, I had a friend that was in a domestic violence relationship, and I was like, why are you there? You should get out. Never thinking that very next year, not only would I be in a domestic violence relationship, but the one that I was in was worse than the one she was in. And so here it is. I'm like, but I'm a strong person. How do I find that? Well, he played on the sympathy. I don't have family. You know what that's like, Alicia. And I go, yeah, I do. Well, you know, I don't have anybody else. You know what that's like, Alicia. And I go, yeah, I do. So really, he was using my traumatic experiences against me to hold me captive in the relationship. And I had no idea what he was doing.
It was a psychological process.
Warfare. Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
And then the day comes where your whole life would change.
Yeah.
And it was a series of couple of weeks that take it from when your jaw was transformed, and when that was the epiphany. This is the brain tip today. And you know I always have a brain tip in every single show that I give, is that sometimes your biggest blessings come in the middle of a trauma that you can't understand. Sometimes your biggest blessings come in the middle of a trauma that you cannot understand. And that brain-shifting epiphany that happens from that trauma not only is a gift to you, it is a gift for you to move forward faster than you have ever moved before in your life. Now, walk us through that.
So I'm in a relationship with him, wouldn't let him live in my house, wouldn't give him a key. That was a fight. You know, I started trying to go to church with my sisters. That was a fight. So that's when he broke my jaw, actually in two places. Took me to the hospital, and then we didn't have cell phones. We had pagers. He said, page me when they're done with you. And so I went in there, and I wouldn't tell the people the truth, because I come from a culture, you don't disclose or you don't snitch, is what we used to say. So they're saying, who broke your jaw? And I'm telling them all kinds of stories. They're like, no, that's not what happened.
And everyone's looking at your jaw thinking, well, this didn't just an accident here, two different places here. Come on, tell us the real story. And this is what happens with most women who are in these type of situations. They don't snitch, as you say.
Yeah. Because the culture already trains us not to disclose our business. And so when I got there, so it was easy because I wasn't going to disclose. And my sister knew. They like, we know he did it. You won't tell us. And I'm like, oh, no. You know, I failed. And they was like, no, you didn't. So they wired my mouth, sent me
back
home.
You fell in two places?
That is a good one. Right. You fell twice. Exactly. You know, here's the funny thing. But when you're in it, you're so busy trying to make excuses for the other person, you don't even think that the excuses make no sense.
And that's what happens with trauma. The fear, the reptilian part of the brain takes over in the brain, and the frontal brain lobes actually stop its connecting ability. And the frontal brain lobes is responsible for logic and executive thinking and decision making. So when someone is in the midst of trauma and fear, they will have such crazy excuses.
Right. And I was sticking to that story. And they're sitting there like, you can say whatever you want. We're not buying it. And so I went to church with my sisters afterwards. You know, they took my youngest daughter. I'd just given birth to her. She was about 2 or 3 months. And I started going to church. And here it is. I saw another family. Mm. I saw a different type of family.
Really?
So the women were welcoming. And, you know, I was too embarrassed to go to church because I literally had, my mouth was wired. And I didn't want to try to talk to my teeth through once, but to explain what happened. So they invited me to a women's fellowship, and the love that they poured on me, they act like I was normal. It resembled the gang minus the crime. It was a community that was saying, we accept you. We love you for who you are. And that's what's making me draw out of that on top of the broken jaw.
And so eventually, there's a moment, and I love what your video on your website says. If you have the opportunity to go to your website, tell people your website over here.
My website is the metamorphosisexperience.org.
So I watched your video on this, and you said, and I love, you need to watch the video on her site. And if I have the opportunity to, I'm going to post it on the Answers Unleashed site too so you can see it. You said that there was a moment in time where you looked at your newborn with your wired jaw, and the moment of realization came.
Yeah.
What happened?
I realized that as a gang member, as a woman that has always defended herself physically, that I could not protect myself and that I needed help in doing this. And even with my sisters trying to help me, it was a realization I was weak and I felt uncovered. And it was the same as I felt as a child. I felt uncovered. And being in the gang gave me a sense of empowerment, although I wasn't empowered. But at that moment, when he broke my jaw and I knew there was nothing I can do about it,
and you
I
had
felt
a
weak.
2-month-old?
I had his daughter.
2-month-old, broken jaw. You have to take care of a 2-month-old, can't talk. You look at your daughter and you decide
to make a decision. And my decision was I went to prayer and I made, I say, if you get me out of this, this is what I told God, I will serve you. Because I realized no matter what I've tried to do to get this individual out of my life, it was unsuccessful. And sometimes it came back a detriment to me because I still had to fight him after I tried to get him out of my house. And I was ready and committed to give my life over and to help women and to help youth. I was like, if I can just get out of this moment, I'll take all my bad experiences, good, bad, and indifferent, and I will propel forward and I would help anybody that would hear my story about not staying in abusive relationships, about not joining gangs, or about how to even love yourself. Because at that time, I didn't love myself, and he knew it.
So what did you do next?
He went to jail. And at first, you know, the first couple of weeks, I was like, ooh, sweet freedom. I'm like, I'm about to run the streets. Sweet freedom. Sometimes we make kind of promises, and we don't know that we still have to keep those promises. Like,
you're
sweet
like,
freedom.
Oh, yes, I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow. Oh, and the next day comes, this bed feels real good.
And that's exactly what happened. And so it was then that I realized that I was pregnant again by him. I didn't know I was pregnant with twins. I was devastated. So I'm thinking, I got out. You know, the wires are finally coming off my mouth. I got my newborn. I got my freedom. And I realized now I'm a woman who has 4 children. And at the time, I thought I was pregnant with number 5. I ended up to be pregnant with number 6.
Oh, my God.
And so then I said, okay, I never had a mother. I've been in, you know, bad relationship, be it intimate relationships or just relationships with peers that didn't turn out well. And I said, something has to be done different. This is going to make me mother number 6. When I found out I was having twins, I just cried. The lady was like, you all right? I'm like, I don't know. But I knew at that point I had to make the last and one of the greatest decisions of my life. So do you go back in the streets with your newfound freedom or do you take these learning experiences? Trust what you heard, whisper to your heart, go in with your sisters and allow someone to pour into you and change your life. And it was at that point I was looking at my kids. I said, I don't want my kids to be on the welfare. I don't want my kids to be in the foster care system. I said, so at that point, something has to be done differently. All those stories you told yourself, Alicia, over the years, I'm going to change. Now is the time that you have to change because now you realize your kids are watching you. It's no longer a mother moment. Do as I say. It's now do as I do. Mm. So I had to do something in order for them to do something.
That's actually one of the best parenting experiences there are. be the change that you wish to see in the world.
Yes. Yes.
So who helped you become a new person?
Went to church. I discovered God, and I had a strong community of women, because I didn't love myself. And I didn't know I didn't love myself. I always thought when I was younger I was cute, this and that. But I didn't understand what love really meant, because I hadn't experienced love.
I didn't experience self-love. God always loves us, but sometimes we don't know how to love ourselves. And I think that is one of the most critical things that women across the globe all need to know, is how to love ourselves. Now, we're loved by God automatically, but it is that process of learning to reprogram any type of false love in which we've ever experienced as a young person, and replacing that with an authentic self-love that actually is better for us.
Absolutely. Even when I used to tell people that I had 6 kids, they go, oh my God. I said, it wasn't about making children. I was seeking love, like a lot of girls that come out of foster homes.
Now, you educate yourself in the process.
Yes.
And you have, tell us about your education after that, and then now what you're doing to educate other people about what they can do to change your lives through education.
Sure. So I went back, got my high school diploma, walked the campus.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I looked and said, I want an education. I went back, I got my GED, well, my high school diploma, my GED. I went to Long Beach City College for 2 years, and I decided then, I'm going to college.
Yeah.
I had 6 kids then. I'm like, I'm going to college.
So you go to a community college.
6 kids.
With 6 kids.
On public assistance.
On public assistance. And you graduate from?
I transfer to USC, University of Southern California, with 6 kids. And I do my bachelor's with 6 kids while on the welfare and public housing and food stamps.
So you get your degree from University of Southern California. And by the way, this is where we met over at the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books. I was just so fascinated about your particular story and in your book. And now what do you do? What do you do to now inspire the next generation, not only to overcome foster care, not only to overcome sexual abuse, not only to overcome being a single mom in a type of situation where you don't have income? What do you do to now help young girls understand the power of self-love that they have to be able to educate themselves to move forward?
The first thing I do, I'm a social worker, but the first thing I do is allowing them to take their past mistakes and let it be fuel for their future, because a lot of times there's shame associated with who we were or what we've done. So the first thing I work on is the shame aspect. There's no shame. Someone hurt you. That's not your fault. And next thing is we work on trauma, generational and cultural trauma and community trauma, because we have it in all those three domains, and to work through the trauma because they didn't know they were traumatized. This is trauma. These are behaviors, and not just to work on behaviors, but to work on the whole person. So that means causality. We're looking at X, what got you to Y. We want to treat the whole person. So not just trying to get them to stop doing something, but to go back and say what happened to the individual in the core and help them work through those things so that then they begin to extinguish the behaviors without me, without our nonprofit. So basically giving them tools in their toolbox to empower themselves.
No matter where they are. And the next, what would you recommend next?
I would recommend that once they get that empowerment, a lot of them wanted to go to school. A lot of them thought it was too late, like myself when I had 6 kids. And when I share the story, it empowers them. If I can go to USC with 6 kids on public aid, you can go and you can make it. I say you can have anything that you open your mouth and put in the universe, you put in the air, you can have those things. I let them know you're powerful and you can release that when you open it and say what you want and believe it.
Yes. Well, Alicia, I really thank you so much for being on the show. Is there any one last statement that you want the audience to know?
I want them to know that they are powerful beyond anything they can ever imagine or conceive. I want them to know that nothing is permanent, just like the cycles of the butterfly. Just because you're a caterpillar today doesn't mean you'll be a caterpillar tomorrow. That you will transform and you will get your wings and you will see from a different view.
Amen. Well, there you have it. We have our newest Einsteins on the show. Thank you, Alicia Cass, for being on Answers Unleashed today.
Thank you for having me.
We have the greatest experts to train you to move forward in a powerful way by changing the way that you see a situation. We allow faith and science to reshape your brain so you see the answers in front of you. I am your host, Olympia LaPointe. Check us out every Tuesday at 2 for the season 5. We're so excited. We're here at kpcradio.com. Our Tuesdays in 2. Check us out on our main website, answersunleashed.com, where you can find out the past shows, as well as about our book, Answers Unleashed, as well as the Answers Unleashed live lecture that was held at California State University, Northridge. And you can always call us at 888-88-ANSWERS to find out the answer to your question. And always find me, shoot me a message through facebook.com/OlympiaLaPointe. I am here with you, reshaping your brain with science and faith to find the answers in front of you. I am Olympia LaPointe.